to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, Jean-Luc.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
You're a fucking pizza thief, Adam.
I'm never telling a story on a podcast again. It's great.
What are the chances you told that story with every single detail included?
Let me tell you...
What is this with people that like don't assume that you're telling a story for entertainment value on your comedy podcast?
That's just it. That's the weird judgment you're subjected to. It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible to be accused of pizza thievery when you know yourself to be innocent. And it's also a terrible story when you include every factual detail that would exonerate me.
It's also really hard to remember that that was like four people on Reddit and not like even close to being a preponderance of listeners.
Look, I know you're trying to mother my hurt heart and brain and ego or whatever. But it's important to remember that most people really like us.
And, I don't believe that for a second.
And the thing is, I'll never believe it.
Yeah, it's a hard thing. I mean, the community of people who have had a pizza stolen from them were understandably aggrieved.
Here's the thing. Like, I should have considered the many, many people who have been aggrieved in that way. I've never had a pizza stolen from me, so I could not know their hurt. I could not know the anguish.
You didn't put yourself in their shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange. Like, I think that the mechanics of that story like work differently depending on what kind of dwelling you're picturing. And like,
the last thing I want to do is give away a bunch of details about my dwelling.
That's exactly also, it. Like
people are guessing like what part of LA I live in and what configuration of my home and all the rest.
Yeah, what kind of down payment you put on.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
And not only that, they're asking these questions as a way to either exonerate or implicate me in a case of pizza thievery, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty
strange.
Pretty low stakes.
I'm frankly really glad to be back to low stakes controversies. Mm-hmm. This is the briar patch, you know.
It's very true.
Other than that, Adam, how's your week going?
It's going okay. I feel like I set up my day really well. I think I got all the stuff done that I needed to get done, including some physical activity, which has allowed a kind of impromptu afternoon beverage situation.
Oh, man.
I'm going to try to make this a thing I look forward to instead of a thing that that I'm stressed out about, this whole podcasting thing with you. And I think the introduction of a regular drink on the episodes is going to be a good idea.
I feel like that's a very healthy outlook, and I'm terrified that we got to a place where you were like, oh God, I got to fucking talk to Ben about Star Trek for an hour. Shit.
You know what? I was briefly there, but then I pivoted out of it into a cocktail, and and now I'm on the right track again, Ben.
I don't know what to think. A whole new series of controversies will now begin to swirl.
Yeah. Are Adam and Ben fighting? No, we're barely talking.
Oh, yeah. I got to catch you up on some stuff after the show, by the way.
How about you? Are you doing okay?
I'm doing okay. I've been just in a tunnel of therapy lately. I got back into it in a big way. I'm doing two a weeks, and that has been like very, very intense.
I mean, that's just a lot of talking about yourself in general in a way that I would have a big problem with personally. You've never had an issue with that, so I'm sure it's something
you look forward to. Thanks. Yeah, I'm spending a lot of time talking about, why do I have to be the center of attention at all times? Why is it always got to be all about Ben?
I know.
It's work I'm sure you're glad I'm doing.
I mean, I'm sure it'll take years to get to the core of that problem.
Well, do you want to see how many years it takes the Voyager crew to get to the core of the Alpha Quadrant?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a lot of licks to get to the center of this wormhole. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 1, Episode 6, Eye of the Needle.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
Unmistakable signs of a butthole, Adam. We get the display on the Voyager's LCARS screen.
The digital graph paper visualization of it.
It's just a big brown eye, you know?
Yeah.
Verteron emanations. Tunneling secondary particles.
They say something in this conversation. They've detected this wormhole, and they're like, great, wormhole. There are fully one-quarter odds that this thing leads back to the Alpha Quadrant. What? How can they determine that? How do they know that it goes to one of four? It could just come back to this quadrant,
Ben,
I've
got an answer, and it's going to blow your fucking mind. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The root word in quadrant is quad, which means four, and that means there are four possible off-ramps that this butthole exits on. So it's basic statistics. Ben, it's a four-sided die. You roll the die, and that's where you end up once you go through this butthole.
Maybe they know something about space buttholes that I don't, Adam, but couldn't it come out in a different galaxy? What if it comes out in the Alpha Quadrant of the Andromeda Galaxy? Like, why does it have to go to any quadrant?
I don't know. That seems pretty far-fetched. That's an extremely okay. long butthole that we're talking about if you were to exit the galaxy.
Yeah,
people aren't normally doing that. I think that only happened once on TNG, right?
Yeah. Have you gotten a load of the butthole on this guy? Now that's a nice long butthole.
I just watched the episode of Curb where Larry gets his long balls caught in the fly of his underwear. He's got long balls.
Long balls. He's got long ass balls.
The cold open of this episode introduces what should be an interesting problem to solve going forward, which is if you know that the constant of your problem is like 70 some years to get home in a conventional way,
yep.
and you still have a ship to run, how much of those ship's resources do you put on the idea of looking for a cheat,
right?
Be it wormhole or alien transport technology or mystery idea, like,
right?
I've got to believe you got to put a quadrant of your ship's crew
But how could you tell that it was a quadrant, Adam? I think that's a great question. And a corollary to that is, how do you assess whether something is too much of a long shot to continue trying?
Yeah. I mean, that's the question. The variables are like effort and amount of crew you have and the amount of time it takes to run an experiment that might save you some time versus use up time in the event that that experiment fails. There's a whole lot of things to consider. But one thing Captain Janeway is 1,000% sure of is she wants to put the ship inside of things.
If there's even the possibility of finding a wormhole, I think we can afford a detour.
Anything they find, she wants to put it in.
She does.
And this tiny space butthole is no different.
She's very tempted by the tight hole. And they do the thing where they pull up to it and put it up on view screen. It is not there. They have to enhance several times.
Enhance. Enhance.
Just print the damn thing!
And when they get it, they find out that this is a wormhole that is way too small to put the ship into. It's only 30 centimeters in diameter.
How can we be expected to teach children to learn how to read if they can't even fit inside the building?
I was thinking about the size of 30 centimeters. It's not a lot. It's about a ruler.
Yeah.
Could you fit
it? Oh, wow. You brought a visual aid to class today.
Could you fit a Doug Jones through this wormhole?
He's probably skinny enough.
Like, if you've got a contortionist crew person.
Yeah.
I think you got to try just sticking
throwing
that guy
somebody
through.
Yeah. In an EVA suit through that thing.
Yeah. But
I don't know if they have any Kelpians on board, but they do shoot a micro probe. And I thought that this was so cool because They actually show the probe's eye view going in, mm-hmm. and they were able to license the footage of Katie Couric's colonoscopy to do this visual effect.
Yeah, entertaining and educational.
I have a pretty little colon.
So brave.
So flatulent. The feeling that they get from putting this microprobe into this hole is that it's an old hole. It's a super old hole. It's so old that the probe gets stuck in its folds of skin.
Yeah, kind of contrary to Larry David's experience of age leading to a loosening of the tissues, this hole is contracting.
Yeah.
And the probe really just kind of gets wedged in there. And unfortunately, it's the kind of probe that doesn't have a flared base.
There's a trick this episode does several times, which is portray the loss of hope in a crew person or a number of crew people, and then immediately give them hope again after maybe a beat. Like, you rest in the hopelessness for just a moment before redemption.
It's kind of a microcosm of the premise of the series, in a way. Like, they are working out these ideas in real time. And so the glimmer of hope here is, like, what if we could turn this probe into, like, a Wi-Fi hub and use it to repeat an image, a message, because there's somebody on the other side of this thing. Our probe is getting scanned. So maybe somebody could pick up a message, and there's a 25% chance that that person is in the Alpha Quadrant.
I like those odds.
Everybody likes those odds. This is awesome.
There's like an emotional wave to this, like the loss of hope that Kim feels, and then something incredible happens because they get the sign that there's someone or something on the other side responding to this message. And right as we're like on our emotional boogie board, getting on top of the wave, we we spill over into our B story.
Coasting down the crest and onto the beach.
Yeah. We've got Kes in the six bay area of the ship. Kes, I feel like, has gone through a little bit of a makeup or wardrobe change this episode that I would say makes her look more Vulcan than she ever has. I feel like she got a haircut or something to emphasize her ears or something.
The hair is definitely different. It was kind of more blown out before, mm-hmm. and they're styling it so that it lays a little more flat and so that she has a more pronounced bang. But I wonder if there's also a loaf thing going on, because I noticed her ears a lot more.
I wonder if they changed how she looks as a reaction to her on-screen relationship with Neelix.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy.
Like the first five episodes, she was like a very foxy ingenue figure paired up with like this dopey Neelix, more adult presenting male figure. Like, I wonder if there's anything there about that.
I don't know. It always makes you wonder when they like really change up somebody's look on a show like this.
Because they don't take that stuff lightly, and it's hard.
Yeah, and I feel like it maybe could have gone commented on, like, but maybe not. I don't know. I don't necessarily think that all of the producers were acting in good faith on the way Kes and Neelix's relationship would get treated on this show. So
yeah. So Walter Baxter's on a bio bed in here, and he's had a gymnasium related injury that he's getting looked at by Doc Holliday. Is that a thing?
It is now.
And this guy's anti-hollow.
He really reminded me a lot of McCoy in this kind of like cantankerous attitude he has that's got like technophobia and kind of hollow racism mixed in. Like, the way McCoy talks to Spock in a lot of the television show especially is very problematic. It's very like, oh, like, is he like the Archie Bunker of Star Trek? Like, why does he just say awful shit to Spock's face about how creepy he thinks Vulcans are? And this guy is doing that same routine with the doctor. But I'm also like, if you're such a fucking technophobe, why are you in Starfleet? Pick a different line of work.
I wanted to follow Baxter's life around a little bit to interrogate to the extent he may be a hollow hypocrite. Like, does he go to the holodeck and not fuck? Like, does he take it back to his quarters old school for jacking?
When Neelix started converting the captain's private dining room for a commissary, he was like the only person on the ship that was excited. He's like, finally, none of this replicated crap. I don't trust it.
I really think this guy is cast well. He has the look of someone with some uncomfortable personal beliefs that you hope aren't aired at a holiday meal, you know? Right. He's got like bad guy on a Hallmark film face, yeah. You know?
Don't pour Lieutenant Baxter a third glass of wine, all right?
Yeah.
He also does this thing where he's like really talking past the doctor, only addressing Kes.
Can this guy do everything a real doctor does?
Yes, he can.
This really rubs Kes the wrong way. Like, the second he's out of there, she's like, why are you letting him treat you like that?
Did you notice how rudely that officer treated you?
The doctor's like,
let's just say I've become accustomed to being treated like a hypospray.
This is classic. You're out on a date with someone and they treat the server poorly vibes here.
Yeah.
You know, Kes yeah. is like going to be nice, and she's realizing that Baxter here is a shithead to the server and a bad tipper.
Yeah, I did like when the doctor walked over to his desk, she subtly took out a 20 and supplemented Baxter's tip yeah. on the bio bed.
Yeah, extra slips of latinum under the triangular pillow there.
You don't want it to blow away.
Back to our A story already in progress. There's a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
That's been convened to update the captain with the thoughts of the crew about the space butthole. And while there's a lot of technobabble happening here, what's really the thrust of the meeting is what happens when it's over. It's that Tuvok is seeing all the hope that Kim has and is like, Kim is basically wearing around a ball kicking machine, waiting for people to stick quarters in it. And Janeway is like, it's better to be in a ball kicking machine and not be kicked than not be in the machine at all because you haven't put in an effort into anything, right?
Very wise, Adam.
Yeah. There's a very disappointed mom opening up the fortune cookie and getting that tome of wisdom.
She's like, what are they even doing with these things these days?
See my fortune now. You're going to be eaten by a big greasy monster. Have a nice day.
So it's Kim and B'Elanna Torres, who I've read on Reddit is someone we should be calling BLT. And I'm just going to straight up fucking steal that. BLT is B'Elanna Torres.
Wow.
This is a fun callback because Kim and BLT were on that very first mission together. Where you got to experience the odd coupleness of them, their different experiences arriving at the same place together. And this project is another example of how different they are. He's attacking this on an emotional level.
It'll mean so much to people back home.
The emotional being what is motivating him towards this solution. He wants to have those once a week phone calls with his parents. He wants to be in touch with his lady friend back at home. And BLT is motivated by the problem-solving aspect of this. She's far more practical. She doesn't have anyone at home waiting for her.
Most of my friends are here on the ship.
It's kind of an interesting scene because I think that Kim kind of realizes that maybe he needs to check his having loved ones privilege a little bit. He's like telling Torres about all this
privilege.
I would say that in the context of this scene it is, because he's telling her about all the people that are missing him and like operating under the assumption that like the world is waiting to find out what happened to the Voyager.
They probably just think we're lost.
And she is like, what are you talking about? We haven't even gone that long. Like, nobody gives a shit about us.
Yeah, I guess I don't view it through the same lens, because Kim's quote unquote privilege isn't something that makes BLT feel bad about her differences with him. And his experience, you know?
No, I wasn't putting it in that way. But like, he does kind of like keep peppering her with questions. We find out that she has like a deadbeat human dad who moved back to Earth when she was little, and a mom that she does not see eye to eye with, who is probably on Ganesh.
The main takeaway from this story is that BLT's dad was human and BLT's mom was Klingon, which means her father must be a great stick man, one of the greats of all time.
Yeah. I mean, that's twice as much work if you're human, right? Do you think he goes back and forth?
Those are very irreconcilable differences. What's the goal here, Ben? Because at this point, the goal is send a message,
yeah,
any message, to let Starfleet know that we're out here. But is the thinking that if Starfleet knows where they are and that they're heading back home, that there's some sort of meet halfway option?
The boy's alive. We are going to send somebody to find him. And we are going to get him the hell out of there.
I wanted to interrogate this more in the episode, because like if they're able to get the message out, does Starfleet send a corresponding vessel out to meet them? And is that a weird as hell mission for the right Starfleet crew to like go 35 years, baby, hop on board, let's do this thing,
like, and just keep our fingers crossed that they'll hold up their end of the bargain?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I mean, I think that because the goalposts move so many times in this episode, it's hard for them to dig into those things. But I did think a lot about, like, there would be some comfort if you were suddenly unable to contact your loved ones and just saying, like, here's where I am, here's why I'm not picking up the phone anymore.
On a very, like, basic human level, I know even the word is racist.
Thanks for calling your drop, Adam.
My very name is racist.
There's safety in just the idea that someone knows where you are. And there is a lack of safety in those moments where nobody knows where you are. It's the kid lost in a department store feeling. You feel that on a very instinctual level. And I think you're right that the idea of them getting a message back and knowing that it was received is going to make everyone feel a little better on at least that basic level.
If you could read one crewman's message home at this point, whose would you read? Because my answer is Kim. Like, I want to know if he like tells his girlfriend, like, look, it doesn't seem like we're going to be able to get home anytime soon, so don't wait for me.
It's episode 6 of Voyager. Is he the crew person we know the best in terms of backstory?
It's probably between him and Paris, right?
Yeah, and all of the parts. I feel like that's got to be the right answer.
Yeah. I just feel like it'd be interesting to know where his head is at in terms of like how much hope he has or has not given up. Because the voice of hopefulness jumps around a bunch in this episode and finds its way into characters that I didn't expect.
Yeah. Do they bring Kes and Neelix with them? Like or do they just like shove them in their ship and dump them out the shuttle bay?
I think that they got to leave someone to set self-destruct, because they can't leave a huge piece of Starfleet materiel like this in the D-Quad.
God, we're going to get to that aspect later. I have a lot of thoughts about that when we get there.
But first, we've got to talk about this B story scene where Kes pays the captain a visit in her ready room, is able to use some of the captain's privilege to get a replicated glass of juice.
Computer, one spinach juice with a touch of pear and one cup of vegetable bouillon.
They get into a contest about who can spend the most replicator rations on the least satisfying thing. And honestly, Janeway wins this one running away. She gets vegetable broth.
Who does that?
Cool.
At least get like miso soup or something, you know?
Oh, miso would be a great choice. It's still just as drinkable.
That's a sippable soup.
Yeah. What are the best sippable soups? Miso is definitely up there.
I think miso is the A number one sippable soup.
A bone broth is a great sippable soup.
Yeah.
Very unctuous.
How about a vichyssoise, Adam? A nice cold sippable soup.
Oh, I like that a lot. And speaking of cold, a gazpacho.
Yeah.
What a delight that would be.
I just got one of those blenders where you can make a hot gazpacho just with the friction of the blade.
I gotta tell you, Ben, the soup blender is a thing you want to be careful with.
You don't want to send the soup up onto the ceiling?
Don't believe the line on the pitcher.
Okay.
You want to come under the line by kind of a lot if you're using it to make the soup.
Okay. Good
tip.
That's what
I'll say.
That's a great tip. This was a birthday gift I got my wife.
Yeah.
Neither of us are huge soup people, so I'm not super worried about that particular.
That's what makes it a great
phenomenon.
Birthday gift, Ben. Hey, I heard you didn't like soup.
We're smoothie people. And I am a frozen daiquiri person, okay?
The greatest gifts are the ones that are like, I want you to like a thing that I like. Here. So, Kes and
Captain just because Janeway, I know we're going to be deposed on the internet later, I got it for her because our earlier blender broke and she was really upset that we didn't have a working blender. So, just so people know, I didn't buy her a gift that was really for me.
Did the last blender break because you dropped your wedding ring into it?
No.
Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
So Kes and Captain Janeway have a measure of a hologram argument here. Which
yeah.
is pretty interesting.
I thought this was really great. Janeway has a really strong initial reaction to no, the doctor does not need to be treated like a person. He is a hologram.
Do you and Neelix feel that your needs are being ignored?
Of course not. We're very happy here. I'm referring to the doctor.
And Kes pushes back, and I thought it was nice to see the captain like be able to hear that she may be, you know, looking at this in the wrong way and is willing to reevaluate.
Yeah, especially because she comes out of the blocks pretty definitively saying that holograms are for fucking.
Yeah.
And for medicine. And that's it.
This is something I really admire about Starfleet captains in general. They are the boss that doesn't leave it at their word every single time.
What's the quote? Strong opinions loosely held?
Wow,
isn't that
I
a
like
sign
that.
Of great intelligence?
Yeah.
That's Captain Janeway's whole deal here, and it's a good look on her.
It's like Larry David's is long balls loosely held.
Long ball Larry. That's your new name.
That signal that they sent through the space butthole is replied to. And
yeah.
The source of the four quadrants, it's the Alpha Quadrant.
It is.
1 in 4 chance. Nailed
it. They nailed it.
Yeah.
The odds were 1 in 4, and they nailed it.
Good job.
This is a cargo ship captain. It takes them a while to get the mm-hmm. signal cleared up, but it's a cargo ship captain. And eventually, they hear that it is a Romulan cargo ship captain. And, you know, Romulans always playing chess. So he thinks this is a gambit. He doesn't believe that they're in the D-Quad. He thinks it's some kind of ham radio prank that they're playing on him.
I love the prank callness of this moment.
Yeah. It
feels very contemporary in that way.
It does. And he shuts the phone.
If I ever find out who you are, I'm going to shove a sausage down your throat and stick starving dogs in your butt.
And so Janeway is just like, hey, so just keep calling that guy incessantly until he picks up again.
Because that works.
Got to suggest that to the Not Even a Show. Like next time Sebastian Gorka hangs up on them, just keep calling over and over again.
Their story feels fairly unbelievable. So it's also like understandable in an odd way. Why would they be believed? They need to come up with a better introduction to their circumstances. Like ease the other person into this concept.
Hey, you're not going to believe this, but...
So there's... I love this. At the end of the scene, Captain Janeway kind of storms off in frustration, and this kind of frees her up for the B-story task
that
she's been given in, I guess, conferring some sort of humanity to the doctor. What's great about what Janeway does here is that she does not prescribe anything to him. She asks him what he wants and needs.
Yeah.
In order to function in a healthy way. And he expresses the idea that his main gripe is people turning him off. What the doctor wants is to be turned on all the time by his own free will or turned off of his own volition. He wants to control his turn-ons and his turn-offs. And this may involve an upgrade to GGG.
Yeah. I heard that Larry Flint, after his spinal injury, had like a thing installed in his balls where he could like click a button and it would give him an erection.
Like an adjustable bed?
Yeah. I mean, Larry Flint had what the doctor wants.
You got long balls, Larry.
Robert Picardo is great in this scene because he never looks her in the eyes at all. He does not have the confidence of a person emboldened to advocate for themselves, you know?
It's very interesting, the kind of sympathy triangle here, that it took Kes seeing what he was going through and bringing it to the captain's attention, and the captain is the one that suggests, what if we put the on-off switch in your control? And he hasn't even really thought through like what it might be that would make him feel more comfortable, but they're adapting to a situation that nobody ever expected. And I just thought it was a really sweet scene.
Yeah. There's a sweetness there, but there is no definitive conclusion to the problem. Like, she doesn't say, okay, done. She's got to sleep on it. And coincidentally, that's where the next scene occurs. It's Captain Janeway's quarters. And I think it might be the first time we get a really good look around the room.
Yeah.
Quarters and how they're decorated.
Her quarters really feel a lot like Picard's quarters in terms of just like the architecture. She's got like an old phonograph player in the corner, which is a fun dead tech decoration.
Sorry, I just love captain's trinkets, you know?
She sleeps with her hair down and her sleep hair is big.
It really is. I mean, over the last couple of months, I've been sleeping that way myself. It's not great. It's not great waking up with hair in your mouth and it's your own.
My goodness.
I always notice this, the bed pushed up against the windows of a starship, and those windows are open. Like, I never sleep next to a window that's open at night.
Yeah.
You know? Like that doesn't have a screen on it, I mean. So it's got to be strange in the future on a ship where that's the default.
Well, the open window is never going to have much light coming through it, you know?
That's the thing. Unless you're in Star Trek Generations.
Right.
When you just have beautiful Malibu sunset coming in at all times.
Yeah. So she takes a call from this ROM in her quarters, and she does kind of like help him through the head fuck of their situation a little bit easier this time. And she's like, listen, like, all we want to do is like send some messages to our people back in the Alpha Quadrant. You can read the messages, like, you can assess for yourself whether you think that they are, you know, spy messages or something.
The Tom Paris messages, I would recommend you read alone.
Yeah. Dim the lights, have a hand towel at the ready.
Nothing to worry about with the Harry Kim messages. Those are going to be very chaste.
So she's just prevailing on him. Like, what if we sent you these messages and you forwarded them on to Starfleet? Like, that's a pretty small ask, and it would mean a lot to us. And I know that our people don't always see eye to eye, but if you could see your way to doing that, that would be awesome. And he wants something to kind of verify their story. He's been able to like analyze their signal to some satisfaction that they are in fact broadcasting from the Delta Quadrant, but he would like to FaceTime. And she's like, well, we don't really have great reception here. I'm not sure if we'd get good FaceTime. And he's like, I've got this taken care of. I've got a signal booster.
Oh, dang. What the heck? I got catfished.
It's pretty exciting, but she's going to have to do something about that hair before getting on camera.
Yeah. So I guess she goes back to bed because it felt like the next scene was like the shift change the next morning, right? And like everybody else has been working through the night on this problem.
That's a great point. This is, I feel like, the moment in the episode with about 20 minutes left where I was like, kind of a lot of episode left. And also this transition in the episode feels very awkward because it doesn't feel very grounded in its own reality in the way that you're saying. Like, this is an exciting moment, a proposition that's been accepted. And what we know is there's a ticking clock involved too. This old butthole is closing, and it's going to crush the probe inside, and then their chance is going
to
be over.
And then it's going to have to go to the emergency room, and some doctor is going to have to...
Hey, Captain, if there was ever a time for an all-nighter, this is probably it, right?
Yeah. I guess Captain's prerogative. She's not going to pull the all-nighter, but everyone else is, so that when they do the FaceTime the next morning, she is fresh and ready to go.
Yeah.
And they talk to this guy, and he's like, wow, you really have like a hell of a ship there. I'm not familiar with that model. There's a lot of stuff peppered in like that, that they're like, yeah, like it's not a secret type of spaceship. You can look it up. And mm-hmm. he's been in space for over a year, and their request is getting like bounced up to the highest levels. Like he's waiting to hear back from the Romulan Senate on whether he can accept these messages or not.
That to me was when hope was lost. Like if you're depending upon legislature to get anything done in an expedient way.
You better hope that they've abolished the filibuster on Romulus.
Right. I love that the angle on this guy, his name is Telic Ramor, like the angle on him is incidental.
Yeah, he's
for everyone who's on the live feed, like he's just sort of his body is facing one way and his face is facing the camera.
Yeah.
Kind of a mall glamour shot posed to him.
Yeah.
This is looking really good.
You can say that again.
I've got to get that platinum.
Get that robe enlargement.
I've got to get that platinum.
What now? Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
What's great about this Romulan is that, like all Romulans, he seems inscrutable and unemotional and just not going to be invested in your problem over theirs. And what Captain Janeway does is act like a hostage, appealing to a hostage taker's sense of humanity. She gets right in there, and she's like, she starts asking about family, starts to, again, like, this is so racist. Like, she tries to humanize him in a way that can get them down on the same level.
Federation is no more than a homo sapiens only club.
And it kind of works. Like, she's talking about his daughter that he's never met because she was born since he left on his mission.
Right.
She's like, listen, like anything you can do to hammer on the Senate to get this done would be huge. We don't have a lot of time. And
it's also so fucking stupid, Ben. Like, they could send the messages through now and decide later whether or not those messages are going to be shared. But the logic of the episode doesn't make that possible.
Yeah. They also talked about, like, we don't have a huge crew. And I wondered, like, how much that would matter in a future, like how, like these messages can't even be like more than like a few megabytes if they're like emails, right?
Tom Paris is the only one sending video messages, and they're kind of a lot.
Terabytes and terabytes of dick pics.
How many dick pics would constitute a terabyte of dick pics? Like a billion dicks? A billion dicks is also known as a Reddit.
We don't have time to get into that, though, because B'Elanna Torres storms onto the bridge and is like, Captain, I need to see you in private. And she's got an idea. She's like, now this is a narrow butthole, but we're shooting radio broadcasts, but we could potentially shoot ropes of transporter beams through that hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would take some remodulation and some phase variances.
They need to change the position a little bit, but but it seems highly likely that they could shoot people ropes through this hole.
And this is very exciting. This could be their salvation. Very tantalizing moment of hope that they could piggyback or bareback these transporter signals on the communications beam.
Once again, this episode, we reach the end of a scene with an extreme amount of scientific excitement before crashing our boogie board back into Six Bay, where Kes is just demonstrating herself to be a very good student.
I enjoyed studying anatomy.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more.
And it's exciting for the doctor to have someone so interested in the field of medicine.
She's done all her homework. She's a good student. He says that she may have an eidetic memory, which I think is like, that's like where you remember everything, right?
What is the exact opposite of that? Because that's what I've got.
I forget.
Well, Sammy Jenkins.
There is a moment here that is emblematic of everything having to do with the doctor and his last to knowness, which is Cass is like, yeah, it's going to be awesome once we're all transported through that space butthole. It's just going to be you over here because I guess you can't be transported through the space butthole. Anyway, that's what's going on.
Then you haven't heard?
Heard what?
If there were 15 more minutes left in this episode, like, what do we talk about back in the early Greatest Gen days? Like, some of our favorite scenes were those, well, I guess we got to blow up the ship. Can't let it fall into enemy hands.
Right.
This is that moment. Like, prepare the ship to be abandoned. Yeah. What happens when you do that?
Like, give the doctor like a like the speed dead man switch so that when they go, he can like take his finger off the trigger and blow the ship.
One of the more expedient ways to apply a sense of real personhood to the doctor is to give them a critical task.
Yeah.
And by saying, Doc, you're the last one on board, you gotta blow up the ship. It would be amazing.
That would have been cool.
All of this Kes studying to be a doctor shit, save it for another episode. The B story of this episode should be the Doc given the power to destroy the ship and all of the weird shit that would surround an argument about that. Like,
yeah.
You can see the McLaughlin group happen where they're like,
issue two.
Are we really going to give them the command codes to do this? Like, has that ever been done before?
And if the transporter thing doesn't work and we need to take them back away from him, what then?
Right, right. Yeah.
Does he like us enough to give them back?
Hey, you know what? Should Baxter apologize before we suggest this idea to him?
Yeah, I kind of regret having been so dismissive of him for the last five episodes now. Instead, it's a pretty like elegiac moment. He's like, remember to shut the dock before you leave, basically.
Yeah, so this was the moment in the ep where my mind raced just about all the possibilities of what would happen if they had to transport off the ship.
Yeah.
But we never get any of those questions or answers because we have to do that classic Star Trek thing of beaming a bank teller tube back and forth before we ever beam a person through.
It was very funny the way Telecromore was sitting the first time we saw him, and now we have a slightly wider shot of his bridge set. Mm-hmm. And it's still really funny because they beam this test cylinder directly onto the desk in front of him and just to the side.
There is no way in hell that I would run the experiment 1 foot from my face.
Yeah, we've seen those things come back on transporter pads like as molten metal, right? This is dangerous as hell.
I love how whenever you're working with the bank teller tube, it's always the person on the other side going,
can you send me a piece of ID? I can't cash a check without an ID.
I've never gotten to use one of those things.
Oh, they're a delight. So great.
Because you see them sometimes at like drive-through ATMs, right?
Yeah. Yeah. While you're driving up to the ATM, people having fun at the bank are using the tube system. It's great.
I've never used a drive-up ATM.
What?
Got too much self-respect. Like going to drive-through for an ATM. Come on.
Oh, I love it. I'll go out of my way for a drive-through ATM.
So this system is working, and like it's in pretty short order that Janeway like marches down to the transporter room with Chakotay. And they receive Telecromore on the transporter pad. It's like, it takes a second to clear up the signal, but they clear it up and they like, I feel like they should have like done a lot more back padding. Like you transported the furthest distance of anybody in history. Congratulations. Like you're basically Neil Armstrong for super long transporters that go through wormholes.
What would have been fun is like if you start as a single on Janeway, and then you pull out wide, and there's like the drugstore banner on the back. Congratulations on your transport. Telegram Moore, breadbox and all, makes it through. I was shocked that he would be the guinea pig here. Like, after setting up his story as a family man, how sure were you that he was going to die? I was positive he would die, if not here, then on the transport back.
I mean, he does die eventually.
Right.
But
we all do.
This wasn't his moment. But the disappointing news when he materializes is that he is from a different, he's from 20 years earlier than they need to go. This is a space and a time butthole. And they didn't realize that. They never exchanged, you know, they never had him like hold up today's newspaper in the FaceTime.
Yeah. Fun bit of business when Tuvok just challenges him with what year it is.
Yeah. I love that it's Tuvok that figures out the time travel bit. Like, I thought it was so funny to imagine Worf or Odo ever being the guy to figure out that somebody had traveled through time. Like, yeah. he is a different kind of security officer.
Kind of a different looking bread box on this guy too.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look like the ones that we've seen ordinarily. And so visually it checks out too. But they should have known just by looking at him. Like you know what Federation uniforms look like 20 years previously. They should right. be able to spot this a mile away.
Yeah.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
So they have to have a McLaughlin group.
Issue 3.
After this. This is an urgent one. And it's fairly argumentative. Kim is down to stick with the plan. He's like, look, this wormhole is leading back to the one of four quadrants that we need.
It's better than spending the next 70 years trying to get back.
And I don't care if it's 20 years ago. I'm down. And Paris, unlike other McLaughlin groups that talk about time travel and paradoxes and so forth, is more in line with what Janeway suggests, which is the paradoxical dangers inherent of doing this. Like, they can't go. They just can't.
I know you're disappointed, Harry.
Well, I really liked that Chakotay was the loudest voice for, we've already changed too much about this quadrant. Like, we can't mess up the timeline now. Like, it's, I think it's a really good writing choice that doesn't come from Janeway's mouth, because I think then they would have had to have B'Elanna like jump across the desk and stab her.
It's just too bad that Chakotay describes it in a, you know, you can't have a spirit guide from the present run into the spirit guide from 20 years ago.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. One of many unfortunate things about the depiction of Chakotay.
Yeah.
I do think it would have been nice to have B'Elanna Torres express some anger in this scene. She's kind of sitting there like taking it in silence, and I thought like she had really strong feelings when they blew up the array.
Who is she to be making these decisions for all of us?
And I thought it would have been interesting to have her be like, what are we talking about here? Let's go back.
Right, there's so much transference in terms of hope and grief and frustration among all the crew people that it is strange.
Yeah.
Who is feeling what when in this episode?
It might just be that because the next scene is where they beam him back with their messages. And the second he beams back, Tuvok is like, hey, actually, that dude dies like 4 years before Voyager goes missing. I just looked him up on Wikipedia. And it's B'Elanna that brings the hope into this scene.
Maybe he left a will telling someone else to transmit the messages. Or he could have given our computer chip to the Romulan government.
If she'd flown off the handle in the McLaughlin group, it would have been hard to get to her being the one to inject a little optimism in the very next scene. But I really like that it's her that injects the optimism there, because it's a little bit of a left turn for her character in a way that I really liked.
It's totally insane that this is left up to chance when the stakes are this high. Like, there should be a dead man switch to this plan if anything were to happen to Telegram Moore.
Yeah.
Telegram Moore really comes off as thoughtful and intelligent and interesting, because he offers up some pretty wild ideas at the end of this McLaughlin group about, like, well, what if I told Starfleet not to launch Voyager on the mission that took you into the D-Quad? Like, that would work, right? He's got all these wild ideas about stopping the Voyager problem before it starts.
Yeah.
His grasp of this is interesting. And
maybe that's why Chakotay didn't like that idea. And he's like, dude, like, we are on season one of a 7-season television show. I don't think that that's going to work.
I like that all of these are smart scientist people, but the fun of time travel is the discussion of all of the possibilities.
Yeah.
And this is a scene that gives you a few of those.
And I love the uncertainty that it's left with. They just are never going to be able to know whether or not it worked, you know?
The music here, when they beam Telek Ramore back, sounded so much like Adagio for Strings, like from the end of Platoon.
Uh-huh.
The signal's in the pattern buffer, transferring to the emitter array.
Phase variance is out of sync again.
Compensating.
I thought for sure he was going to die. Like they gave him the messages, they tried to send him through the butthole. The butthole collapses on him mid-transport.
Yeah,
they lose his, both times.
Yeah, he's cat food on the other side or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. This episode was unwilling to plumb that kind of grief. Instead, it's time travel grief, which hits in a different way, huh?
Yeah, but I think it's a really nice moment because it's that we tried our hardest to get this and we can't even know whether it worked or not, you know?
Your description of BLT being the one to keep the candle lit, you know, she's the one with the hope of maybe, is not something that it seems as though Captain Janeway is willing to forward in her own right. She takes it like a pro, like an athlete who just lost a game. She's like, on to the next episode of Star Trek Voyager.
You just got to practice harder.
Yeah.
Come back and beat him next time.
You know, I don't know what's wrong with Chakotay's backstory either. It's not really up to me, but I just know we're on a team and we each bring the best we can to every episode.
The button on the episode is once again in six bay with Baxter. This time the EMH is kind of throwing his weight around as chief medical officer. I think it's the first time he refers to himself as that. And he's like, hey, listen, dude, like you keep injuring yourself badly working out. And if you can't demonstrate the ability to not injure yourself, I'm going to have to talk to your superior officer about it, which really dumps a bucket of ice water on this jerk.
This guy's really fucking up, Ben. Like the workout philosophy that you have during quarantine is don't get injured ever. And I feel like they're experiencing a version of this.
Yeah, it's interesting that he voices all this hesitance to be treated by a hollow doctor and then also is the one that seems to be like the super user of the Voyager medical insurance system.
Yeah, that's so weird. You know, you don't care about a thing until it affects you personally.
Yeah. Huh.
Kes is back in her purple Spider-Man costume.
Here comes the Spider-Man!
Which is just something I'm going to call attention to every time.
The EMH is like, hey, thanks for talking to the captain for me. That was great. I'm going to, you know, I've got a list of things that I'd like to have brought down here to Six Base, seeing as how I can't leave here. And I have one other request, something of a personal nature. I would like a dick. They didn't program him with one, apparently. That's terrible.
This episode ends with like almost a smash cut, right? The doc is like, one of the qualities of a real person is a name. And I would like one of those.
Adam, he wants a dick, not a name.
And so they smash cut to the credits, which reveal his name, Ben. The doctor's new name is Rick Berman, Michael Piller, Jerry Taylor.
That's a lot of middle names for one guy.
It's a mouthful. But he gets his wish.
Yeah. Good for
nice,
him.
Nice tight conclusion to the episode.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies. I don't like friends. And I don't like you. Mr.
You promised there would be no more time travel episodes on Star Trek Voyager. Ben, you said, and I believed, but I don't care that you were wrong. That's because I like episodes like these.
I didn't say that. I said that there's no way that they can go back to the Deus Ex Machina specifically. And I said it as a joke that nobody got.
That was a lie.
I feel like I say this every episode. I describe what the main conflict is on this show, and that's always changing. The having of hope and then putting that hope in the hope smashing machine should be like a part of every fucking episode from here on out.
Yeah.
Like, I think we got something here. Oh, I'm starting to feel a little bit of hope. And then slamming your dick and balls or vagina into a turbo lift door.
Hard to slam a vagina in a door. Maybe a boob?
Whatever you've Thumb? Got sticking off of you. Like, that should be a thing. That should be a thing every episode.
Yeah.
There's a quality to this hope and its relationship to how much time it'll take to get home that should be almost like caustic. It should be like running in the background of every episode. It should affect every decision. And yeah. I hope it does.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I'm saying I like that this episode contains that quality, and that is why I like it. What about you?
I like it too. I think it's a really strong episode. I think that it really feels like a bit of a microcosm of the whole Voyager story in that way, that there's so much about it that's about maybe this is an opportunity, no it isn't. And I can see that becoming a trope that wears thin if they ring that bell every single time. But I think done right, it's something that, you know, almost anybody can relate to. Like, there's like tons of things that I want to have in my life or would like to achieve or whatever that I haven't yet. And like,
you got to give up on all that, man.
Some of those things are just, you know, progress is slow. Some of them are that I have completely gassed myself up and it's not realistic that I want that thing, whatever it is. Yeah. Some of it is, I should never have thrown in with this fucking pizza thief as my business partner and comedy co-conspirator,
right?
Because he's not trustworthy. He just take a slice of pizza out of another man's mouth.
I'm like the Hamburglar of pizza. I'm like the piz burglar.
Robble, robble indeed, Adam. Robble, robble.
The pits burglar? That sounds like I'm from Pittsburgh. And
yeah,
I'm
it
a,
does.
And I'm
yeah.
A, I'm a, it sounds like I'm a thief from Pittsburgh.
Yinzer stealing Bobolies.
Yeah, Yinzer stealing sandwiches with fries in them.
Do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages in the inbox?
Oh, I'm on my way there, Ben.
All right.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from Jack in Melbourne, Australia. Plus, Sarah, Colin the Pomeranian, and Doris the Maltese Shih Tzu.
I like dogs with human names. That's fun.
Yeah, this is fun. And it is to Mike in Melbourne, Florida. Wow.
That city in Florida isn't also pronounced Melbourne?
No, because they don't
Melbourne,
have...
Melbourne, Florida?
G'day, welcome to Florida. This is about the worst accent I've ever done. The message goes like this. I have such fond late 90s memories of watching your next-gen VHSs together. Now that you live on the other side of the planet rather than the next room, keeping in contact via our love of Star Trek has really helped me feel like you're not too far away after all. Merry Xmas and love to you and Tanya, plus Ben and Adam. Merry Christmas, Mike in Melbourne.
Thanks for not forgetting me and Ben.
Yeah. It's another P1 that's months and months late.
Love to everyone who lives in Melbourne and Melbourne.
Yeah.
from The Greatest Generation.
Yeah, and Merry Christmas.
Ben, our second Priority One message is from KJ. It's to Nick Locarno from Nova Squadron. The message goes like this: screw you, Tom Paris. We know you're really lick. I always want to say this, Lick. Lick Locarno. Lick Locarno is his porn name. We know you're really Nick Locarno. Cito Jackson was killed off, but you got onto another series. I've held on to this since 1995, and it kept me from enjoying Voyager until Jeri Ryan joined the cast when I was in college and questioning my heterosexuality.
Wow.
Schulte, please get a Seska drop ready because she is 100% that bitch.
Damn.
Well, KJ, I've got to remind you and everyone else that Ben and I self-produce Greatest Gen and always have. If you're talking about Schulte, he's the producer-editor of The Greatest Discovery.
Yeah, but we'll tell him to get a Seska drop ready. I mean, it might be time to start thinking about having Rob come on board Greatest Gen as a producer as well.
He wouldn't want stolen producer valor.
I know he doesn't want it, but I'm just saying maybe it's a conversation worth having.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done editing the show. I'll give it to Rob's. It's his if he wants it.
Well, if you would like to help support The Greatest Generation and send a super late Christmas message or something, you can head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set your message up there.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I just couldn't figure out Telek Ramor. Because in an earlier scene, he's like, yeah, I got a daughter I've never met and a wife back at home. It's pretty tough for me out here on the science ship. And then he accepts the most dangerous mission ever. More dangerous than any mission he would ever do on that science vessel he's on. He gets
Maybe.
Beamed through the butthole.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, was he lying about the family? Was he lying about how much he misses them? Was he choosing science first as like a thing, like as his life's goal? Like, does he put the professional above the personal or the family in his hierarchy of needs and interests? I don't know, but like, he's the one that does something amazing this episode. He travels through a time butthole. No one's ever done that, right? And yet no one makes a big deal out of it either.
Yeah.
And that's that's the paradox to me. It's like, of all the people to experience something amazing, a Romulan's probably the worst one because they're just not going to celebrate that at all. I don't know. What I'm saying is I'm just very, very confused about Telek Ramor and his motivations.
Yeah.
I think for that reason, I'm going to make him my Shimoda.
Nice. My Shimoda is Tuvok for the part where they're like going to the transporter room to receive Telek Ramor. And Tuvok is like, Captain, I'm going to have to follow this guy around the ship the entire time he's here. And
yeah.
I love that that move of stating the super obvious, like, hey, make sure you drain the pasta when it's done cooking. Of course, Tuvok, we're going to have security on the strange Romulan we're beaming on board our ship from across the galaxy.
Do you think it's Telek Ramor just being a Romulan that gives him that quality of not being blown away by being aboard a future ship?
Yeah.
Like he could and should be?
Yeah, he really treats that as being not as remarkable as it actually is.
Yeah. Like, do you think we could just stop off at a replicator real fast? Like, because I would love to try this thing out. What soup options do you have, Captain? Romulans love soup. And Janeway's like, well, we've got a great vegetable broth here that I'd love for you to try. And
he's like, sounds a little more zesty than what I like. I like a real bland soup.
He takes a beat and he's like, nah, we can just go to the McLaughlin group. It's okay. I'm fine.
Oh, boy. Well, Adam, this has been a fun episode, a regular episode, as determined by the game of buttholes, the will of the caretaker. But we need to determine how and what our next episode will be. I'm going to head to gach.biz/game We are currently on square 95.
Amazing.
And the next episode is season 1, episode 7, Ex Post Facto. After Paris is convicted of a murder he swears he didn't commit, Tuvok must play detective to clear him.
Oh, this sounds fun.
Yeah, I like a stone cold whodunit in my Trek.
Wow.
All right, dude, I'm going to go ahead and roll this bone. It looks like the two things we could potentially hit are a space butthole that would take us down to an nth degree episode, or...
Don't want that one.
A Mournhammered episode.
Well, that could be fun.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Mournhammered being the Power Hour episode of Greatest Gen. Very divisive type of episode for us.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Well, Adam, the other divisive type is, of course, the nth degree, and that is what I have hit. We are down to square 78, and we have to do extensive research for the next episode of The Greatest Generation.
No one's going to like that. I can hear the disappointment in people right now. They're like, ah.
They want to know these facts. They want to learn all the deep knowledge that we're able to uncover about
Star Trek. There are a thousand other Star Trek podcasts who will give them the facts. No one else will give them the dick jokes that we will.
Well, I'll also say no one else will give them the kinds of facts that we will.
Very true. Let's put a new spin on it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that will be next week's episode. In the meantime, we really appreciate the generous support of the Friends of DeSoto who head to MaximumFun.org/join and become monthly contributors. For as little as $5 a month, you can help make sure this podcast stays afloat in the troubled waters that are these modern times. We really appreciate it. You'll get bonus gifts. You get tons and tons of bonus episodes that are behind the paywall. And it's something we really, truly appreciate.
It's totally worth it if you want to keep us on the air. I mean, not to make a threat or anything.
Yeah.
I guess I'm making a subtle threat.
It's a subtle threat. We got to thank our buddy Adam Ragusea, who made the Janeway song, the original theme for The Greatest Generation Voyager, as well as Dark Materia, who made the OG theme for The Greatest Generation, the Picard song.
Yeah, that's what we use as our end credits theme.
Got to thank our buddy Bill Tilly, who now runs all of our social media accounts. He's got at Greatest Trek on Twitter and Instagram, going strong. And if you head over there, there's lots of fun content for you to enjoy. Not to mention Greatest Trek on Twitch. Twitch.tv/Greatest Trek. We've been doing a little bit of live streaming over there. Most Friday afternoons.
Could you use a friend? A virtual friend? Anyway, so many places to meet a friend of DeSoto online. You could bump into one on Twitter. Many of them use the hashtag GreatestGen. There are Miriam Facebook groups about all kinds of topics. There's a Discord that I recently dropped in on, Ben. The Greatest Gen Discord. Very conversational. Lots and lots of people there. And it seems like a pretty positive place. I mean, here's the thing. I was told that the Discord was at drunkshimoda.com.
Yeah.
It does not appear to... That URL I was having problems with last week, and so were you. So, I mean, when I joined Discord, I looked up Greatest Gen, and I was able to get to it that way. But, Greatest Gen Discord.
Yeah, is drunkshimoda.com is launching my Discord app right now.
All right, well, maybe there was a hiccup back in the day, but yeah, drunkshimoda.com is where you go to meet some friends of DeSoto over on Discord, and I recommend that you do.
That rules. If you're a very suspicious person that does not assume positive intent, you might check out the Greatest Gen subreddit. And if you want to know like origin stories behind jokes on the show, you can head to greatestgen.wikia.com. And with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that maybe should have saved its pizza thievery story for this upcoming episode so that people could get to the bottom of the criminality
Verily, I am the Tom Paris of Greatest Generation.
Yeah, there was a pretty intense moment at the beginning of the podcast when I was talking to Adam through the jail bars, when I was like, hey, listen, if you come with me on this Star Trek podcast mission, I might be able to get you a presidential pardon.
Yeah, and it worked.
I mean, you came with me on the mission. I'm not telling you whether or not we're giving you the pardon yet.
Hey, Ben. Do we get to win this time?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Audience supported.